From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for no compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop this inhuman race.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and each week I bring you no compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about corporations, government agencies, and people who are killing the planet, and about the folks who have detailed information on saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, or email or web addresses, so please get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information, because this isn't couch potato radio. It's activist radio, and I'm asking you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down in that dragon at the road blockade. If you do have information, news, comments, or announcements for Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil or pen handy and listen for the contact information at the end of the show.
And here's some action news. 30 beagles, 10 ferrets rescued from Marshall Farms lab breeders subject to numerous USDA violations. Here's the full text of the Marshall Farm Animal Liberation Front Action Communique. On the evening of December 5th, we visited Marshall Farms in upstate New York, liberating 30 beagle puppies and 10 ferrets. After outsmarting constant security patrols, we scaled the electrified fence, breaking through the door of one of approximately 50 sheds of animals. Inside, we found hundreds of beagle puppies waiting to be shipped to vivisection labs, transferred from one small cage to another, destined to be killed. Before the next security patrol, we packed up 30 puppies and 10 ferrets and stole away into the night with them, taking them away from their hellish life and giving them a life filled with freedom and joy. As a breeder for Huntington Life Sciences, Marshall Farms would have ensured that these animals had a tortured, painful life suffering in labs. Beagles are routinely poisoned to death and abused at the hands of callous workers at Huntington Life Sciences. Workers have been caught punching beagle puppies in the face, shaking them and throwing them against walls, and dissecting living animals for research data that even technicians admit is faulty. These 40 animals will never have to endure such brutal conditions. This action is dedicated to Barry Horn, whose life work brought attention to the suffering of animals in laboratories everywhere, and whose actions inspired people to care about animals, to act on their behalf, even if it means risking your freedom for theirs. Let this action serve as a warning to all who aid Huntington Life Sciences in killing 500 innocent victims every day that you cannot hide from justice. Signed, Animal Liberation Front. And here's some additional commentary from the Animal Liberation Front press office. Marshall Farms is a breeder of beagles and ferrets for animal research laboratories across the United States, most notably Huntington Life Sciences, which has been a major focus of animal rights activists for the past several years. In April of this year, anonymous activists raided HLS labs in East Millstone, New Jersey, and rescued 14 beagles, beagles likely to have been bought from Marshall Farms. Marshall Farms has been cited for numerous USDA and Animal Welfare Act violations over the past several years, including not meeting bare minimum requirements, failure to provide dogs with proper veterinary care, inadequate cleanliness and surgical procedures, violations of transport regulations, improper sanitation, and inadequate space. It's clear from its deplorable record that Marshall Farms has complete disregard for the lives of the animals it breeds for vivisection, stated David Barbaresh, ALF spokesperson. Besides the obvious, that one cannot care for the lives of animals if one breeds and sells them to a life of torture and misery, this particular breeder is an example of the worst of the human species. The Animal Liberation Front is an underground movement of compassionate people who rescue animals from breeders, laboratories, fur farms, and other places of abuse, and provide them with safe homes or release the animals into the wild when appropriate. All members of the Animal Liberation Front remain anonymous so as to continue their work without interference from law enforcement. The ALF is nonviolent and has never injured or killed any person or animal in the course of their actions. Maxam Pacific Lumber slaps another lawsuit on critics. As its logging operations in the disputed hole in the Headwaters plan barrel forward at a frenzied pace, Maxam Pacific Lumber Company has filed another intimidation lawsuit to curtail protest activities. In the lawsuit filed October 26, Pacific Lumber, along with its contractors Columbia Helicopter and Steve Wills Trucking, asked for damages and restitution in the amount of approximately $10,000. Pacific Lumber also filed for an injunction to prevent individuals and North Coast Earth First from harassing, threatening, or stalking plaintiffs entering into property, THP 520, blocking or damaging roads that provide access, or conspiring or soliciting others to enter onto the described property without the written permission of the plaintiffs. Besides the nine named individuals, the suit names Jane and John Doe's 1 through 200 and all persons acting in concert with them as defendants for the purpose of adding other people to the preemptive effort to prevent logging critics from carrying out activities that have not yet happened. The named defendants showed up early on the morning of October 24th when news of Pacific Lumber's logging of the long-disputed hole in the Headwaters became public. They were on the public road talking amicably with the arriving workers when they were put under citizens' arrest by Pacific Lumber Security. The activists maintained they were not carrying out illegal acts, but were cited and released when Humboldt County Sheriff's Department officials arrived. Charges have not yet been filed by the DA's office. Activists are concerned, however, that District Attorney Terry Farmer is working in conjunction with Pacific Lumber to ensure that activists are sued, a breach of the DA's duties as a public servant. Pacific Lumber is using the sheriff, the DA, and the courts as its three-headed lapdog, said Earth First activist Daryl Cherney. The sheriff performs citizens' arrests on legal protesters. The DA files charges so the activists can show up in court and be served with a lawsuit. And the judges issue injunctions like two-for-one giveaway meal tickets at Denny's. The controversial logging plan, THP 1-97-520, comprising over 700 acres of redwood and Douglas fir forest, runs alongside the South Fork of the Elk River. Despite the fact that the California Water Board set what environmentalists touted as a good precedent by requiring water course impact monitoring on Pacific Lumber logging plans, a convoluted and politically charged process is allowing Pacific Lumber to proceed on the plan that sits entirely within the outer boundaries of the publicly owned Headwaters Forest Preserve prior to baseline monitoring. This area was identified as a high priority for acquisition after the state and federal governments purchased 7,500 acres of old-growth and cut-over land in what has become known as the Headwaters Preserve via the 1999 Headwaters Deal. Although heavily impacted, the South Fork is considered one of the best coho salmon spawning grounds in California. Pacific Lumber previously filed a slap suit, that is a strategic lawsuit against public participation, against 58 people who were opposing their logging in the Mattole River watershed, an area of old-growth Douglas fir forest in southern Humboldt County. That lawsuit claims over $100,000 in damages. Some defendants have filed a countercomplaint charging Pacific Lumber with false arrest, assault and battery, theft, and property destruction. If you'd like more information about this, contact Karen at Bay Area Coalition for Headwaters, 2530 San Pablo Avenue, Berkeley, California, 94702. That's the Bay Area Coalition for Headwaters, 2530 San Pablo Avenue, Berkeley, California, 94702. You can give Karen a call at 510-548-3113. That's 510-548-3113. Or you can send email to bach@igc.org. That's bach@igc.org. In Holland, a transport office has been occupied. On Monday, November 19th, 50 activists from the Green Front, the Dutch branch of Earth First, and Friends of the Earth Utrecht occupied the Nieuwegein office of Rijkswaterstaat, the government infrastructure planning office, to protest the expansion and relying out of the A12 motorway. They stormed in dressed as Dutch traditional Zwartheiten Christmas elves, spending time throwing around traditional peppernuts until they were dragged out by the police through an emergency exit. Reich Waterstadt has been one of the major lobbying parties behind the expansion that is taking place in a salami slice style. In 1996, the Green Front occupied a construction site when the motorway was being expanded between Utrecht and Bunnik. Now, not only will the A12 be widened to 6 lanes, but it will also go through a historic forest area between Bunnik and Driebergen, east of Utrecht. The routing decision was recently made. The construction could start in about 2 years. This story brought to us by Groen Front, Earth First of the Netherlands. Their webpage, www.groenfront.nl. That's GroenFront.nl.
Paranoia validated. Will grand juries unravel activist networks? For the past few weeks, Mary Moss Fanelli, a tough but effusive environmental activist, thought that she was being followed. An occasional tree sitter in Eagle Creek, she has spent time on the front lines, but according to friends, when Moss went about her life in town, going to cafes, the library, etc., she began to suspect she was being shadowed. A few times, conservatively dressed men would follow her to different locales, sit nearby, and pretend to read the newspaper while obviously eavesdropping. Either they were feds or they had no social skills, explained one friend. Others who know Moss corroborated the stories. It's not just Moss's craziness, one friend added. 2 weeks ago, her paranoia was validated when she was served a subpoena to appear before a federal grand jury in Eugene, along with two other forest activists. The summons was a shock, and the purpose for the grand jury still remains unclear, but environmentalists suspect that law enforcement agencies are taking advantage of recent increases in their powers and trying to unravel the tightly knit activist circles in Oregon. This is opportunist, said Ivan Molesky, a spokesperson for the Cascadia Forest Alliance. Using the buzzword of terrorism is a chance to harass people who have been a thorn in their side. At a grand jury, unlike a full-blown trial, attorneys are not allowed to be present and traditional civil protections are relaxed. Activists who refuse to answer questions run the risk of being jailed for contempt. An expansive study about grand juries released last year by the American Association of Criminal Defense Attorneys found that dozens of forest activists in California have been detained under such circumstances. One spent more than 100 days in jail without being charged for any crime. Throughout the bulk of the 20th century, grand juries are the favored tools of prosecuting mafia kingpins. Because they can be convened behind closed doors, potential witnesses remain protected and anonymous while district attorneys gathered mountains of damning information. In more recent years, grand juries have been directed at political activists. Environmentalists and criminal law experts speculate that the grand jury will show Moss pictures of other activists, ask for information about their whereabouts, and attempt to pry data about activist strategies. The tactic of the grand jury is to single out and isolate a person against their community, explained Kim Marks, a close friend of Moss. Moss was unavailable for comment after her canceled grand jury hearing. She retreated into the woods, but instead their attempts have brought this community closer together, added Marks, explaining that rallies and fundraisers have been held for Moss. The grand jury has been postponed until mid-January, and we'd like to thank Phil Busey of the Portland Mercury for that story.
Thank you, Dennis. Worthwhile harvest. Gifford Pinchot might find itself in protest spotlight. Tucked away in a historical rural corner of Washington, the Gifford Pinchot National Forest has gone about its business with a minimum of outside attention. That's changing. Named for the nation's first Forest Service chief, the Gifford Pinchot is fast becoming a focal point for environmental groups protesting timber sales planned for patches of old growth. In the past year, environmental activists have shown up twice at the forest's headwaters in orchards to show their displeasure over timber sales in late successional forests. This spring, the Radical Earth Liberation Front claimed responsibility for spiking hundreds of trees in a planned timber sale east of Mount St. Helens. Mainstream environmental groups, too, are taking notice of the Gifford Pinchot. Susan Jane Brown, director of the environmental group Gifford Pinchot Task Force, said local residents need not look beyond their neighboring Mount Hood National Forest outside Portland. There, activists perched themselves in platforms for months to block the Eagle Creek timber sale. Though Brown said her organization does not involve itself in such direct action activities, preferring to fight its battles through administrative appeals and lawsuits, she expects conflict on the Gifford Pinchot. Based on what's going on in Oregon and the fact that the direct action community in Washington is closely looking at the Gifford Pinchot as a potential hotspot, I would guess if these sales begin to be awarded that we're going to have tree sits, Brown said. There's going to be a lot of direct action and a lot of media attention. The Gifford Pinchot's never experienced that before. The Gifford Pinchot stretches from Mount Rainier National Park to the Columbia River. It is one of four forests west of the Cascades in Northern California. Oregon and Washington intended to be the workhorses for timber production under the Northwest Forest Plan. Along the Oregon's Mount Hood, Willamette, and Umpqua, each of the forests contains pockets of the big old trees that will be needed to meet the regional goal of selling about 800 million board feet of timber per year. Brown, who recently took a group of Forest Service employees out to one controversial timber sale in the shadow of Mount Adams, said the harvest will make the stand inhospitable for owls. She got no argument on that point. They probably won't nest there, said Earl Ford, natural resources staff officer for the Gifford Pinchot. But that's not the objective of the Northwest Forest Plan for this area. The intent of the Northwest Forest Plan was to try to cut a deal between the environmental community and the industrial community. Thank you, Eric Robinson of the Columbia Staff Writers.
All right. Thank you, J-Man. Migrating vultures in Virginia to be killed starting this Sunday. As reported by the Associated Press, the U.S. Department of Wildlife Services Division intends to aid the city of Staunton, Virginia, in its efforts to drive migrating black and turkey vultures away from its community. No one claims the birds are hurting anyone. They are simply annoying to property owners in the area. Our federal government agency and agents intend not only to use pyrotechnic noises to make the environment inhospitable, but also to kill several members of these protected species and then hang the dead birds by their legs from trees in order to scare the others away. Of course, vultures play a vital role in the ecosystem by effectively recycling dead animals, which is why they are protected in the United States and many other nations. These birds pose no threat to humans or companion animals. Turkey vultures eat only vegetation and animals which are already dead. This is also the primary diet of black vultures, although these birds will occasionally prey on slow-moving wild animals, thereby contributing to the process of natural selection. Neither species is in any way aggressive. Indeed, when attacked, they use projectile vomiting rather than violence to defend themselves. These extremely playful and intelligent birds are sacred to many people due to their key role in the natural cycle of life. As someone who lives in an area where large numbers of turkey vultures overwinter, I can testify that these large and Pacific birds cause no harm to anyone. Indeed, I feel honored to have the opportunity to observe these very sociable birds as they stand sunning themselves together in the fields or playing flying games in the sky. It pains me to think that even one will be sacrificed upon the altar of human ignorance, and I hope that in my fellow environmentalists and admirable liberation activists will take a few moments to try and stop this peculiar slaughter. Here's what you can do. If you live anywhere in the United States, you can call or fax the United States Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services Division and protest the use of federal workers to kill members of a protected species without cause. The deputy administrator exercises national program oversight. His name is William H. Clay, and his phone number is 202-720-2054. That's 202-720-2054. That's the phone number for William Clay, the deputy administrator. And the person who runs the Eastern Regional Office is the one who's going to be directing those field operations in Virginia. His name is Rick Owens. His phone number is 919-716-5632. That's 919-716-5632. And here are some points you might wish to make when talking to either of these two gentlemen. These birds are hurting no one. These birds are protected for a reason. Persons killing these birds should be prosecuted rather than abetted by the federal government. This has nothing to do with agriculture. The local citizens involved are annoyed suburbanites rather than farmers fearing harm from wildlife. Hence, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services Division has no mandate to be involved and should not be spending scarce labor or funds for this effort. And if the Wildlife Services Division should be involved in any way, it should be to help the local citizens figure out how to deal with their perceived problems without killing any members of the protected species. If you live in Virginia, you can call the State Director of Wildlife Services, Martin Loney, and make the same points. His phone number, 804-739-7739. That's 804-739-7739. And when talking to Martin, please note that Mr. Loney himself says that the problem the citizens have with the vultures is largely symbolic.
All right. Thank you, Roman. 22,000 acres to be protected for two California plants, fulfilling a court order won by the Center for Biological Diversity and the California Native Plant Society, the United States Fish and Wildlife Service issued proposed rules to designate and protect 22,054 acres of critical habitat for the purple amole. That's Corlum gallum purpureum. I should take in Latin. On November 8th, and the Neyland Prairie Pennycress, Thypsi californicum, on October 24th. The amole, a member of the lily family, occurs in oak woodland and grassland habitats in Monterey and San Luis Obispo counties. It is threatened by military training, off-road vehicles, fire suppression, cattle grazing, and invasive non-native species. Amole is an Aztec name brought to the United States by Spanish explorers from Mexico. It is also sometimes called a soap plant because Native Americans crushed the underground bulb into a lather with which to glue arrows together. Okay. The fibers of the pulp jacket were used to make brushes. The pennycress, a member of the mustard family, is endemic to serpentine soil on the outer north coast range of Humboldt County.
Yeah, we already heard about the pennycress.
Yeah, P-E-N-N-Y-C-R-E-S-S. It has declined by 48% since 97, with only 5,100 plants remaining today. It is threatened by the habitat fragmentation, destruction, primarily in form roads. Micro machines.
Sometimes we get the same story from two places, you know?
Yeah, it's a little parts of it. I thought that was cool. I didn't exactly catch that on until I was halfway into it, and I'm happy to let you guys know that we're protecting the pennycress.
Yeah, and what's the punchline there?
Oh, that is the punchline. That was the end. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're hurrying me, but I wasn't pointing to where I was, so you had no idea on this 20-page article what I was doing.
Let's move to Africa. Poachers kill first Kenyan rhinos for 8 years. Poachers have killed four black rhinos in the first attack on endangered animals in the Eastern African country's national parks in 8 years, wildlife authorities said recently. The Kenya Wildlife Service said rangers found the rhino carcasses stripped of their horns in the Tsavo National Park in southeastern Kenya in late November. A full investigation is underway and security has been tightened in all rhino areas, said Joe Kioko, acting director of the Kenya Wildlife Service. Those responsible for killing this endangered animal are being sought and they will be brought to justice, he said. The Kenyan Wildlife Service said there have been isolated incidents of poachers killing rhinos outside of Kenya's national parks, but this was the first time they had ventured into the protected parks in search of their quarry in 8 years. Kenya's black rhino population has fallen from about 460 animals to about 460 animals from an estimated 20,000 animals in 1970, mainly due to poaching. Authorities have managed to control poaching more recently, but concentrating the rhinos in smaller areas, making it easier to protect them. The Kenyan Wildlife Service said that in the last two decades, Africa's black rhino numbers have fallen by 90%, and the animals are now found only in reasonable numbers in Kenya, Zambia, Zimbabwe, South Africa, and Namibia. And we thank Reuters News Service for that story. And here's a song about animals rising up.
Fat and docile, big and dumb, they look so stupid, they aren't much fun. Cows aren't fun. They eat to grow, grow to die, die to be ate at the hamburger fry. Cows well done. Nobody thunk it, nobody knew, no one imagined the great cow guru. Cows are one. He hid in the forest, read books with great zeal. He loved Che Guevara, a revolutionary veal. Cows say tongue. He spoke about justice, but nobody stirred. He felt like an outcast, alone in the herd. Cow doll drums. He mooed, we must fight, escape or we'll die. Cows gathered around because the stakes were so high. Bad cow pun. But then he was captured, stuffed into a crate, loaded onto a truck where he rode to his fate. Cows are bummed. He was a scrawny calf who looked rather woozy. No one suspected he was packing an Uzi. Cows with guns. They came with a needle to stick in his thigh. He kicked for the groin. He pissed in their eye. Cow well hung. Knocked over a tractor and ran for the door. 6 gallons of gas flowed out on the floor. Run, cows, run. He picked up a bullhorn and jumped up on the hay. We are free-roving bovines. We run free today. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. Crashed the gate in a great stampede, tipped over milk truck, torched all the feed. Cows have fun. 60 police cars were piled in a heap, covered in cow pies, covered up deep. Much cow dung. Black smoke rising, darkening in the day, 12 burning McDonald's, have it your way. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. The president said, enough is enough. These uppity cattle, it's time to get tough. Cow dung flung. The newspapers gloated, folks sighed with relief. Tomorrow at noon, they would all be ground beef. Cows on buns. The cows were surrounded, they waited and prayed. They mooed their last moos, they chewed their last hay. Cows outgunned. The order was given to turn cows to whoppers, enforced by the might of 10,000 coppers. But on the horizon, surrounding the shoppers, came the deafening roar of chickens in choppers. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or dog. Oh, oh. Cows with guns.
And Earth First Radio will be right back, so stay tuned.